Welcome to the Author Revolution Podcast, where change is not just embraced, it's celebrated. I'm Carissa Andrews, international best-selling author, indie author coach, and your navigator through the ever-evolving landscape of authorship. Are you ready to harness the power of your mind and the latest innovations in technology for your writing journey? If you're passionate about manifesting your dreams and pioneering new writing frontiers, then you're in the perfect place. Here, we merge the mystical woo of writing with the exciting advancements of the modern world. We dive into the realms of mindset, manifestation, and the transformative magic that occurs when you believe in the impossible. We also venture into the world of futuristic technologies and strategies, preparing you for the next chapter in your author career. Every week, we explore new ways to revolutionize your writing and publishing experience. From AI to breakthrough thinking, this podcast is your gateway to a world where creativity meets innovation. Whether you're penning your first novel or expanding your literary empire, whether you're a devotee of the pen or a digital storyteller, this podcast is where your author revolution gains momentum. So join me in this journey to continue growth and transformation. It's time to redefine what it means to be an author in today's dynamic world. This is the Author Revolution Podcast, and your author revolution starts now. Well, hi there. Welcome back to another episode of the Author Revolution Podcast. Man, I start every one of these things in that same exact way. Isn't that weird? It must be like muscle memory at this point. But at any rate, I'm very excited to have you here, to have you listening today. Today's podcast interview guest is really inspiring to me. And his story is one of great challenge, of great adversity, and overcoming that adversity. And so one of the things that we're going to be discussing in here, you know, if you are sensitive to listening to interviews or talks about alcoholism or drug abuse, I want you to maybe skip this episode. Or if you're okay with it, if you want to hear about someone wonderful overcoming such a profound shift and becoming the guy he was always meant to be, you're going to want to have a listen to this episode, because Ryan Penley has inspired me in so many ways just by listening to his story. He has a humor about him, a way about him that just really makes you see how diseases like alcoholism can take you into a spiral that really, I guess, takes you off of your beaten path, off of your true, you know, higher calling, whatever you want to call it, whatever you want to describe it as. But yet somewhere deep inside, you still know that you're meant for more. You still know that you can overcome this thing and you can be that better person. And his story, his interview today is one of really becoming that better person. And I think you're going to really find it an inspiring and enlightening episode. For someone who, you know, I don't have any like huge vices. I'm not a huge drinker. I'm not, you know, into anything like that. I'm more of like the health nut on that side of things. But that doesn't mean I don't have family members who have struggled with alcoholism, who struggle with drug abuse. And so seeing this from his perspective really opened my eyes a lot. And I think that you're going to be just as inspired, just as touched as I was having this conversation with Ryan and how he got to the point of writing his book. And so without further ado, I'm going to dive into this episode because I think you're going to want to listen to everything Ryan has to say. So let's get to it. Well, hi, Ryan. Welcome to the Author Revolution Podcast. I'm really excited to bring you on the show today. So before we get started, do you want to tell my audience a little bit about who you are and what you do?
Yeah, so I'm a recovered alcoholic. Of course, there's a lot of people that say, oh, I'm always be in recovery. However, more importantly, I'm a person who's gained some traction in a very difficult problem, and that problem being substance abuse. And so I have visited and stayed at the rock bottom for quite some time, and I managed to see some light at the end of the tunnel and get some progress going, and it worked out for me. So I have this responsibility that in my mind to reach back out to people that might be in the same circumstances and kind of just offer my method and my gained knowledge. Now, it may not work for everyone, but it's still, I feel, my mission and my responsibility to at least say, hey, this worked for me. Give it a shot. if it doesn't work for you, then, hey, I understand. But and so I took all of these thoughts and this belief, and I packaged it up into a book. It's called Man Up, Sober Up. And so I published that in December. And so I've been kind of just trying to get the word out and just kind of spread the awareness that I've come out with, half memoir, half strategy in addiction recovery.
That's awesome. It's definitely a topic we were t discussing before we started that I haven't really touched on a whole lot. Like for me in my own life, I have people in my family who have had substance abuse problems, but I myself, I'm not really much of a drinker, haven't really kind of dived headfirst into that sort of thing. And so it never occurred to me to really kind of dig into it. But I do know my audience, everyone struggles with different things at different points in their lives. And so I'm like, okay, well, if even though I'm not dealing with this, I know people listening probably are. So, do you want to talk a little bit about the addiction, like where it started and how you realized you had that problem going on? Like what happened there?
Yeah, so I mean, there's a few little prongs in this this how addiction sank its teeth into me, if you will. I had started drinking early. It's in my lineage. My mother and father, both addicts, both alcoholics. That's an entire podcast on its own. But like, and so, and then I guess another layer of that, the opioid epidemic.
Oh, sure.
It was like 2008. I had had a broken bone, and they prescribed enough painkillers to kill a rhinoceros, right? So it's like I
Oh,
was instant addict. I know that many of the people close to me, they like to pinpoint like a moment. They're like, that's when it really took a turn. Like, I was still participating in drugs and alcohol, but it wasn't like, most of them will agree that like that's where everything just took a hard left. And then the spiraling of the addiction kind of took off from there, right? So
sure.
after that, I gave myself diabetes. I know that's I'm kind of going over a lot of things a little bit quickly here. So
It's all good. Our
I
conversation's
lacked
gonna
an
take whatever take it needs to go, like whatever track. It's good.
I see. So and I also hope people don't think that I take these things lightly. I just think that I laugh to cope. And so
Sure.
I say these things that I might kind of move over it quickly, even though they're serious topics, but I think it's just a method that I've kind of, used because it kind of helped at times. So,
Well, for sure. Yeah, because it's like if you don't laugh, what are you going to do? Cry? So it's a better feeling to laugh at it. Yeah.
So, I mean, and then so I suppose the opioid addiction, and then that led into some other elements of substance abuse. And then I was diabetic. I went to a coma. And after I came out of the coma, this is where all like the people that are familiar with my book or my story, they think, oh, well, that's when you turned around, right? Boom. You went to a coma, you came out, you said, oh, thank God I've made it. I must be here for a reason. I'm never going to do drugs and alcohol again. Nope, that is not what happened. I continued to fall down that staircase to eventually reach the bottom of my personal rock bottom. And that happened after a few years after that, struggling with mostly alcoholism at that point because I couldn't afford the drugs. I couldn't find the drugs. So now it's like, okay, $7 bottles of vodka it is. And so I stayed there for quite some time, found myself homeless. I locked up a couple times. So, the if you had a resume for rock bottom, I think mine would look pretty good. I'd say, well, here's my credentials for being at the rock bottom. I think objectively, these things suck, right? A lot of them suck. But that's kind of the brief, the cliff notes, if you will, of the addiction path, I suppose.
Sure. Do you feel like it was a lot of the hereditary aspect combined with, like what was the, to me, it makes sense, and maybe I'm just looking at it wrong, but like, is there an emotional or a mental thing that makes you like first start getting into the drugs and alcohol where you're feeling like, oh, I can't cope with this thing, or I have so much I need to do, but I don't know where to start? Like what was your kind of catalyst, do you think?
Well, you started off that question with the mention of the hereditary, or and I think that's such a it's so hard because you can't quantify it. And then it's like, does it play a role? I believe so, wholeheartedly. especially since I had never known my father. And then when I had kind of reached out to him later on down the road to find out that I followed an incredibly similar path, not even knowing the guy, I thought to myself, wow, that's pretty powerful. However, I think that it's nearly impossible to know like how much of my life was predetermined because of my genes, and then how much of it was due to the environment. I think this is a classic question of most therapists, most
Sure.
counselors. It's like, okay, what's the real problem? But looking back now, I think that, everything has some degree of responsibility. However, I didn't spend too much time delving into it. I stayed a little bit more, I'm a future-oriented type of person. I feel like it's a little more useful to, instead of spending time figuring out the responsibility at ratios.
Yep.
So I think it's much more useful to say, okay, well, what can I do? Like, yes, that's true, and that's also true, but I don't really want any of it. So what can I do to change that? And I kind of
Love
like
that.
lean towards towards change. I suppose I'm change oriented. And
Yeah.
so therefore, now what does that do? It does a couple of things. It allows me to take full responsibility. I never once blamed my mother or father. Like even looking back, and I mean my mother, she still struggles with alcohol and pills. I don't blame her. Zero. I blame her zero. And I blame there's very little I blame other than myself. And if at points in time for me that I thought, being in difficult situations, I'm like, well, this sucks. And I want to blame other people and other circumstances. I realize that at the end of the day, I'm picking up the bottle, I'm putting the pills in my mouth, and that's very useful. I know it's hard to do, but it's the most useful because it's the only thing you can change. So that in a nutshell is like is the reason why I didn't spend too much time like kind of like trying to figure out like, well, how did it happen? It's like, okay, well, I don't know exactly how it happened, but I know it happened. I became an addict. That's certain. So it's like, well, now what do I do?
That's cool. That makes a lot of sense. In fact, I teach a lot of authors how to manifest their destinies, right? To change their outcome to be more what they're desiring versus what they're fearing. And so I don't spend a lot of time when I'm teaching either on like limiting beliefs or blocks or all those things because it isn't as useful. It's like your forward momentum is going this way, and so you may as well go that way. So that makes total sense in my brain. Yeah, and it
That's
totally.
beautiful. Yeah, so you touch on manifestation with people you work with.
I do. Absolutely. Yep. It's one of my favorite things to mental gymnastics, I guess, and to think about and to kind of be playing with and then teaching. So I teach authors how to utilize it and put it into work. It's really fun. It's probably one of my favorite things.
So those are all positive things about mental gymnastics, but when you said that, it struck a chord in me because when I was an alcoholic, most of the, well, anyways, throughout the whole process, I call it mental gymnastics because people are like, well, how the hell did you go into that liquor store? You know what happens. It's like my brain would do gymnastics. It would trick me into thinking, not only is it a good idea for me to go into that liquor store, I better do it now. And not only when I do it, will I be happier, but the whole world will be better off. If I, my brain would do this trick, like, and then I do it. I'm like, how the hell did I do? It's almost like I time traveled, and I'm like, damn, my brain did it again. It somehow convinced me that every single move that I just made was the only move to make, and it's clearly not. But in my mind, it was convinced. This is what's happening, and it's what has to happen. So that's funny
Sure.
that you use that terminology,
Yeah.
because.
That's awesome. That's definitely a synchronicity trying to light the way, I think, for sure. Yeah. That's super cool. And I get what you're saying with that. Like, I mean, it goes for pretty much anything. Like, right? The author who wants to write their book but convinces themselves that, oh, they can't do it right now, or the author who wants to lose weight and they're like, oh, but this is too hard. Like you're always convincing yourself of something, and that subconscious mind, it can play some deep roles once you get those neural pathways fixed. That's for sure. Oh my gosh. Okay, so what was your first step then in recovery? Was it literally that recognition in the moment, or was it like a big wake-up call? Like, what happened for you there?
Well, I think like the cliches, like the first step is like admitting you have a problem. But my circumstances were so undeniable. I mean, there wasn't any guesswork, if you will. It's like,
Sure.
I have a problem. Like, it's like that is very clear. It's like I wasn't wondering if I should stop. It's like, okay, I'm going to die, or like the results of my behavior are going south fast, right? So it
Right.
wasn't like that element was gone, even though I think that it's undeniable. It's a cliche for a reason. People, you have to admit it, whether you want it to change, like whether you're at the rock bottom or not. If you want it to be different, you have to admit that there's something to be changed for the better. So, there's always, and I think a lot of times when I'm thinking about this, it's never a definitive moment, even in the positive direction, right? There wasn't like this bounce off the bottom, like ding, and then it was like straight up. It was more of like, okay, this has got to go differently. And then I tried and I failed, and I tried and I failed. And so it was, in the end, my best synopsis of like, I suppose the rising off of the rock bottom would be, it was small wins, and I'm talking humiliating small wins that I had to gather and grow. And so I tell a lot of people that like I had to start so low. It was like I had to convince myself to not drink for 15 minutes at a time. And I failed at this. And it was like, that's not something you brag about. Like, you don't post on Facebook, I've been sober 20 minutes. It's like, no, that's
Heck
not something that
yeah.
works.
If
Like,
I don't know, I would be like cheering if I knew one of my closest friends was struggling and that was something they needed to feel like it will help them rise. Hell yeah, post that thing for
well, see, that was,
sure.
and yes, but to convince somebody while they're in the trenches that it's worth something to even tell or value, it's
Oh, for
hard,
sure. Yeah.
because you look everywhere, it's like, oh, I've been sober 12 years, I've been sober 6 months, and then when you're struggling to get an hour, you just think, I'm screwed. So
Right.
the there's very little definitive moments either in any real direction. I seem to have spiraled out of control downward rapidly, but almost like, well, what happened? It was like it all stacked up on me so quickly. And then
Sure.
also on the other end, it was like these small wins that grew, and then they grew exponentially. But they started so small that like at the time they were embarrassing and hard. They're hard
Yeah.
and embarrassing. So it's a vicious tandem of attributes there, but that's what it was.
Think that's really valuable, though, to be able to look back and remind not only yourself, but then to inspire others that it's not always that big climactic moment. It's not always like the angels singing and praise happening and like all the things that it is digging out those smaller moments and being able to be okay with that as they're building and maybe not even realizing that you're doing it, but you are doing it, right? Was it like, did
Oh.
you know you were building up your kind of arsenal of like experience to be able to notice that you're moving in the right direction? Or were you just like, I'm just focusing on this one goal right now?
Well, you say that, right? And then when I mentioned this, like one day at a time, you've heard that. We've all
Yep.
heard that, right?
Oh,
One day
yeah.
at a time. But essentially what that is just shrinking. Like, I have a phrase like, oh, it's like you've got this dragon to conquer and destroy, right? Well, sometimes you gotta somehow chop up that dragon into little tiny lizards, right? So, and it's like if you're walking around stepping on lizards, you probably wouldn't be looked upon fondly, right? It's not a good thing to think about it that way, unless you're in it. And when you're in it, you have to just really just shrink the whole thing down to where you have tunnel vision on whatever specified amount of time that it is that you have to conquer. And so your question is, was I aware? I started to realize that I had to find success. And when I would fail, my adjustment was to shrink the goal. And then when I did it, incrementally, right? Like, so I'm going to smaller efforts. When I say small efforts, that's not accurate. Just easier attained, meaning it was more likely for me to succeed. And
Yep.
that has to happen, right? It's like It's like if you're playing a game with a child and you just beat the kid all the time, it's useless. It's a useless exercise. However, if you let them win, so I had to create a way to get success in a win. I had to find a win somewhere. Yeah. And that had to happen only with what I could handle. And what I could handle wasn't much. And so now when I started to realize it was, you know, especially with sobriety. Sobriety is basically, it's all boiled down to time in between your last drink and today. So that metric really, when you have the goal of becoming sober off of drugs and alcohol, it's really just the one. How much time has it been since you last used or you last drank? And so what was quite useful is like, I just have to grow that time. I just have to grow that amount of time. And that is my only mission. I had to eliminate everything and all else that was in my life in order to make that happen. So, and then now what I can say to anyone that's struggling with the same kind of addiction to substances is that I think anybody going after any goal will gain clarity, but none so much for somebody who's been abusing substances, because the substances, they cloud your mind. They cloud everything. So when I use the word exponentially, as far as describing my success, it's correlated directly to clarity, right? So you gain these successes, and then as you gain them, you gain just a little bit more clarity, right? So, and then they both start to grow, and they grow in tandem. And then as they grow in tandem, then you start to become aware, and then you gain momentum. And then once you have that momentum, your awareness, clarity, all of these things all work together. And then it may kind of also sneak up on you. Like, I'm like, wow, it's been a year, you know, like that kind of thing, but it doesn't start out that way.
Sure,
it doesn't start out that way. It's like, damn, this is the hardest thing I've ever tried and ever, the hardest thing I've ever done. But then as those other elements work together, you start really gaining some speed and some momentum, you know, and then it works for you.
That's awesome. Well, I love that you start, like you described it as like you have to like hyper-focus on the one goal, the one thing. And like, if you've ever studied manifestation, that's kind of the same thing where you're looking at, like, if you're at the emotional scale, if you're at the lower end of the emotional scale and you're trying to get up to, you know, happiness or excitement or bliss or any of those things, you can't take a leap to there. You can't just jump the whole thing. You have to kind of work yourself up. So it's the next best feeling thought, the next best, like whatever you can reach for that's going to help you feel better. That's what you're doing. And so you're looking for the evidence of that thing that's going to make me feel better as you're going upward. So that's really smart that you found that and were able to do it.
Sure. I think I found it only through simplification. But you touched on something that I really enjoy, and it's like, but you have to help me out with remembering the label of it. It's not Maslow's hierarchy. You're just touching on the hierarchy, right? And it's in the book Power Versus Force, right?
Okay.
So it's like that hierarchy of like emotions, like love being very, very, very high. Yeah. Right? Are you familiar with it? And then
I'm familiar with it, but I'm from the Abraham Hicks side of things, so that's where it comes from for me. Yeah.
I see. I needed some help for some references, right? These are all people much smarter than myself. So it's like,
I love it. That's really cool though. I mean, and what you described when you, like, if you take a step back, obviously when you're in it, it feels like a much different animal, but in like the grand metaphor of things, being an author is a lot like that too. It's like, if you're trying to write a novel, or you're trying to write your memoir, or you're trying to write whatever, and looking at it as this big thing that's out there, you have to break it down into the smaller steps. Maybe it's not chapters. Maybe it's not how many words today. Maybe it's how many words I can write in the next 15 minutes. And so it's so similar when you look at the growth process of it, and then the clarity that comes from actually doing it for the however long you can kind of dig into it. It just goes to show you, like, when we simplify the things that we feel are hard for us, because they are, I mean, they're obviously hard. But when we simplify it, we can find our way out. It's like we can incrementally get ourselves unstuck from that place. And it doesn't matter if it's alcohol or if it's your book or, you know, whatever it is. It's really fascinating to me. So let's actually talk about your book, because you obviously went through it all. You've put it down. Like you said, it was it's a part memoir, part instrumental for others to follow up on. Yes. So do you want to tell us a little bit more about it?
Yeah. So So it started with me being incredibly intimidated. The same notion. I looked at it, I thought, oh my God, these authors, you know, I put them like on this pedestal, like I didn't even have the slightest thought about being able to achieve what I had looked at as far as authors were concerned. I was like, oh my gosh, that's something that's just another level. And then I started to write, and then, you know, it kind of took off. It started really with a mind map. I was like, how do I organize all this stuff? And I started just kind of mapping things out on the floor. And it was such a glorious experience, by the way. Anybody that I think feel like everybody should try mind map. I was using
I love
envelopes.
that.
I was using envelopes. For whatever reason, I had like 1,000 envelopes with adhesive on the back. And I guess I w may have wasted a bit of paper here, but I was using the envelopes and I was sticking them on the wall, right? So I was peeling them and sticking them on the wall, and I was writing on them with a Sharpie. I was using a Sharpie and writing all the ideas and kind of spidering out. And I mean, my brain was like caught on fire. And then, you know, it was this experience that was just flowing and flowing. And then I said, like you had just mentioned, about writing a certain amount of words every day, right? And it was 1,000, but my brain was still on fire. So I was like waking up at like 4 in the morning, and I was cranking like 3,000 words a day. And now some important notes that I think people should know about when you're doing this is, like, one, don't edit as you're doing that process. Like, just like let it go. Like, just keep going. Like, don't slow down and like all hit in the backspace. Like, screw that. Like, just go for it. And so I was like on fire, like going through the process. And I'm like, man, because most of it is like stories from my life. So it wasn't like I didn't have to, like, I was telling a story, and it wasn't like I was just telling a story. So it wasn't like too much thought. It was more of just like expression. And then I was coupling that with like useful knowledge that I had gained over all the years of fighting for my recovery. And then, you know, during this process, then it was editing, and it was like, man, I got my butt kicked so bad. And I'm just like, and I'll say this, like, it wasn't because I had, like, you know, it wasn't like I turned in a paper in school, it was like covered in red ink, even though it was kind of like that. But it was, I realized that I don't like being told that I'm wrong. Go figure. I'm a guy with an ego, right? And so my ego is just getting like pounded, like, this is an incoherent thought. I'm like, damn, you know, like, so,
But it's coherent to me. What are you talking about?
yeah, I'm like, you don't get
Take
it.
the
That was the hardest part of the process. But you know, you had mentioned doing hard things, and writing a book is an accomplishment, and usually with most accomplishments comes challenges, and that was probably the most challenging element, I suppose, of writing the book.
Sure.
But you know, looking back, like, it's such a glorious experience, and to see it, and think to yourself, like, man, you know, like, I found a couple of things that maybe I would have liked to have been different, but man, I pulled the trigger and I got it out there, and that's like a big deal, you know.
Yeah, taking perfect action for sure. I think that
Yeah.
makes total sense. Yeah. And it was interesting that you talked about mind maps because when I teach authors how to like plan their series, we start with mind maps. And so I actually have a program that we use to do it on, or I teach them how to do it just on paper. I mean, you
Yeah.
could have used sticky notes instead of your envelopes, but you know, hey, whatever.
Hey, my brain was on fire. I had no time for that.
Love that. That is too funny. Gosh. Okay. So if authors are looking at wanting to like read your memoir and understand like what are some of like the most important things that you think that they're going to get out of your book?
Yeah. Well, there's a bit of entertainment, I think. There's a bit of shock value, right? You know, some of the stories include like I was in the coma, the diabetic coma. You know, you know, my mother, she sent me to jail for trying to cut her off. She said I tried to cut off her head. I know that sounds like a lot, but you know, it's in the book. And so, anyways, there's like these stories that like I went through. They happened to me. So there's a bit of entertainment there. But then I'm a big fan of people smarter than myself, and I think I did a decent job at distilling some pretty good knowledge out there, from again, people much wiser. And I tried to organize it as best as possible. All credit given to them, of course, but like, you know, and then deliver it in a structure that can be used, right? There's actionable steps. There's specific activities and exercises that people can apply that kind of stuff, because I wanted it to be useful, right? So there's a level of entertainment, and there's a level of useful tactics that people can apply in their lives. And, you know, maybe not even at being at the rock bottom, but, you know, I get into some kind of higher level thinking. You know, I don't get into manifestation, but there's certain elements that are congruent with manifestation, like a relationship with time, you know, having an appropriate relationship with time. And then also there is another section of the book that's a relationship with failure, which I think is also important. And so those are kind of like the higher level development of, I believe, like healthy recovery. But don't get me wrong, like it starts in the trenches. It starts like one day at a time. But I think in an ideal situation, somebody could use my book to maybe to not only like gain success in recovery, but like launch, you know, an upward trajectory in their lives. And so I have some of that in there as well.
For sure. Did you ever expect to see yourself as, I mean, obviously you didn't quite expect to see yourself as an author, but did you see yourself as an educator that's going to help uplift people like this? Was that ever on your radar?
No. And why? Well, that was because I have a lack of, had a lack of belief in myself.
Sure.
But now it's like all arrows are pointing in the same direction.
Yeah.
So that's why, you know, like I'm kind of on this path now to where I'm looking for any and all ways to kind of like package myself up in the most useful manner for as many people as possible. Right. So, you know, that's the next development. And so, and I can say this, anybody that's going to write a book like this, I mean, not to take away from the therapeutic process, but it's very useful. It's like it's built in kind of authority. It's a key for many, many doors, right? So it's like, because people respect the fact that even if they don't read it, they don't know anything about it, and they're not an addict, they're like, well, at least this guy, he did something. He wrote about it. And he took all the time to put it in this book. You know, maybe I'll talk to him. You're talking to me now, right?
And yeah, because, right? Yeah.
Exactly.
That's amazing. Yeah, so. It does... Yeah, I see what you're saying there for sure, because it does give you that instant authority, because if nothing else, we know that this was an ordeal that you had so much passion about that you spent time and energy putting down on paper. And not many people do that. Like some people say they want to, some people say they're going to, some people say they're, you know, in the process of it, but not many people get to the end result and finish it and put it out there and be like, here's the good, the bad, the ugly, enjoy. You know what I mean? Yeah. Not many people are brave enough. And that's very brave. Yeah. Oh my gosh. So what are your highlights in your life now? Like, how does your life look now compared to what it looked like then?
I'm having a baby in like a month.
You are? What?
What? Yeah, well, I mean, no, my new wife, it's all very new to me. So, my son is due in April 13th. Thank you very much. Yeah. And yeah. You know, looking back, I didn't think that was possible. I think that once a lot of these things fall into the same kind of I could describe them as like, I didn't think they were possible once upon a time. I'm like, no, yeah. Not me. I'm not that. Oh, no, I'm not that. And now I'm like, well, yeah, I am that. I am a father. You know, I am an author, right? Like, and didn't start that way. It did not start that way. Like, how it did start was like some small steps in the right direction, and they grew. So these days, and then in addition, I'm also studying to become an addictions counselor. So I should be achieving that degree in this November. And so, yeah, there's a few things going on. Yeah.
That's amazing. It's so fun to see how we have that power to transform. I mean, transforming and transmutation and all those things. It's like magic, right? It's just so cool. And what you said about, you know, how you look back at something that you are now but you never believed you could be. And it's amazing how belief is truly like the thing that allows us to do what we want to do or become who we're meant to become. And if beliefs are just thoughts we continue to think, of course they can shift, but they have to sometimes shift slowly, right? You have to inch your way towards believing you can make it happen.
I absolutely adore everything you just said. I adore all of it, right? Like however, I also think back to if I were to be hearing that, say, 6 or 7 years ago, it would have fallen on deaf ears.
Sure.
If somebody were to tell me like, oh, what you think will eventually become your belief, and it will eventually become who you are. And I'd say, get out of here, man. I'm busy. I got to go find alcohol.
But your subconscious mind would have heard it and like stored that sucker away. And then when it starts coming back around, you're like, oh, wait a second. Cause I do that all the time with things where I'm like, that's dumb. I'm not even going to focus on that. I'm never going to be a romance author ever. Never, never. Now I'm a rom-com writer. So it's like, sometimes you just have to push away the one thing that you know is going to help you or know you're going to like or enjoy because I don't know, ego.
You do rom-coms?
I do. I've been writing urban fantasy for over a decade. And so I kind of got bored and I'm like, okay, I've got 20 some odd books in urban fantasy. Let's do something different. So I started rom-com last year. The first one's published, second one's coming out next month. So yeah. And I told myself I would never write romance. Never.
Well, all right. This is I'm being too transparent here, but like I cry when I watch The Notebook.
I love it.
I like rom-coms. I'm not like, I wouldn't say it's like my go-to for entertainment, but like, yeah. I'm not going to pretend like I don't like watching, you know, Matthew McConaughey, you know, on stage, you know, with Jennifer Hudson. And like, I'm like, there it is. Okay.
Right.
Good looking people having a laugh.
I love it. It was funny. I was originally thinking I would go angsty romance because I was like, I could do that. I could definitely pull off angsty. And my PA at the time was like, you know, if you took out all the magic and stuff from your urban fantasy, it's basically rom-com. Like, why don't you write rom-com? You like the funny stuff. I'm like, oh, yeah. Kind of do.
I don't know what angst. What does that mean?
It's kind of like, will they, won't they? You know, like, oh, they're a little anxious about all the things. You know what I mean? So it's like all of
and
that.
Then you root for them, right? You root for them, yeah, to get together.
Yeah, you can do that in rom-coms anyway. You can add angst if you want. You can add all the things, but then it's just funny too. So then you do all the things.
That's true. Oh man, that's awesome.
That's super cool. Well, okay, so for those in my audience who are still struggling with their own sobriety or with like maybe recognizing it or whatever, I noticed on your website that you have a free 21-day challenge. Can you tell us a little bit about it and like what authors and those listening might benefit from that?
So I put it together because, as I had mentioned earlier, right, like I needed to find some wins. And looking back, I realized how powerful it was once I started stacking them up. So the 21-day challenge, and like looking back, I'm like, I call it a challenge, but like I really set people up for success and to win. So yeah. It's more of like a guidance to some wins, especially if you've been struggling to get some. And they're both like mental and then also physical, right? Because I was also a personal trainer, so I know a few things about exercise. And actually, I write about it in the book that like when I was, you know, I was kind of like struggling mentally, I was also struggling physically. And so when I started to like kind of like, I'm like, I got to get my body, you know, I got to get moving. And I started with like, it was collectively 3 minutes of jumping jacks, right? Which, you know, I mean like at like 30 seconds at a time and then maybe 40 seconds at a time. And then like, before I knew it, like if I stacked all those wins up and then I became a personal trainer like shortly thereafter. So it's like, all right, but what I want to show people is those, how do you start? How do you start reaching out to your loved ones? How do you start rehashing your old friendships that you may have lost because of your abuse? Or, you know, how do you start saving money again after you blew it all from like going out every night? And so the 21-day challenge is really like a guidance to some wins. And then what would really make me happy is if they take all those wins that they stacked up in the 3 weeks and then they just like double down into something else larger. And so, yeah, it's a great place to start. And then, you know, if you want to start feeling better physically and mentally, and you have had some serious hangups in your personal relationships and your physical health, right? It's a great place to start. It gets delivered to your email. I don't have a bunch of things attached to it. Like, it doesn't come followed up with a bunch of sales and things of that nature. It's really just, it's a free tool. And I hope it serves people right in getting them the at least a few steps in the right direction.
That's amazing. Okay, so if they want to find it, want to find out more about you or your book, where do they go?
Yeah, two websites. One's really simple. It's just my name, ryanpenley.org. That's ryanpenley.org. And then so that's got an author contact form on there. You know, at the moment, like, you know, I'm just like answering it. So it's like, it's all good. You know, like, I mean, not answer immediately, but I'm doing my best to just kind of just, you know, and I think it may be like a little bit confusing because people are like, oh, well, where's your facility? I'm like, don't have a facility. I'm just a guy. How are you? You know?
Yeah. Like, so, what's up? Let's work together. It's great.
Yeah. Hey, how are you? Like, the other website is myrockbottomrecovery.com, right? And you can also go on Facebook, My Rock Bottom Recovery. You know, the 21 day challenge is on myrockbottomrecovery.com. And then just you go on Facebook, you check out the page. We're doing well over there. So either two websites really work to get a hold of me.
It's awesome. And I'll make sure that they're in the show notes for today's podcast episode as well. So if you want to just find a really quick link to go out to both of those, you can do that by going over to the show notes page. And Ryan, thank you so much for coming on and talking about everything. I think this conversation is so important. I love your energy. You have been absolutely amazing. So thank you.
Thank you so much.
Isn't Ryan's journey amazing? He is one of those guys that I just love his sense of humor. I love his personality. I love that he is willing to take a look at the harsh realities of what his life looked like before and share that with the world so that we can understand what this looks like from the inside out, right? So for those of us who aren't struggling with these things, we can understand what it looks like. And for those who are, maybe it's you. Maybe you're struggling with alcoholism. Maybe you're struggling with drug abuse. There is light on the other side, right? You still have that inner beacon, that part of you, that inner part of you that is telling you, you can still be whatever you want to be, whatever you are meant to be, it is still there. And I think sometimes alcoholism is just a way to cover up us not listening to that voice, of us being maybe scared of our calling or being scared to move forward in a way that puts us out there, especially if we had troubling childhoods or we had a troubling life in some way, shape, or form. You know, we're always trying to find a way to ease the pain when in fact, sometimes the best things that we acquire in this life are on the other side of pain or will eventually require pain, but it's still worth it, right? You know, love is still worth it, even though at some point, even if you're together your entire lives, at some point, a life is going to end or something is going to happen or, you know what I mean? There's always things that we're trying to overcome. And so our jobs then is to be the best, most authentic version of ourselves that we can be. And sometimes it means giving into the dark side a bit so that we can understand what our truths really are and allow the light to come back in. So I hope that you will check out Ryan, check out his book, make sure you like leave him a great review. He's a wonderful guy. And if you've got any questions at all, feel free to reach out to me, obviously. If you want to be able to download the transcript to today's podcast episode, you can head over to authorrevolution.org/229. You can grab it there. I will also include links, obviously, to Ryan's website and his book, and I hope that you will check it out. In the meantime, I hope you go about having a wonderful rest of the day. This is the beginning part of April 2024. We've had some interesting kickoffs. We've already kicked off Mercury retrograde, so who knows what kind of stuff the universe has for us. There's always communication blips that happen during this time. However, I find I'm most creative during this time too. So maybe you find that as well. So enjoy the rest of the week, get some words on the page, and go forth and start your author revolution.